It's been a dry 3 weeks in Iowa. Some parts of the state have gotten relief in the past few days, but in other places, there hasn't been more than a sprinkle. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. Today is Horticulture Day, and we're going to find out how serious this dry spell is. I'll talk with a meteorologist from the National Weather Service about our dry conditions and what it'll take to get back to normal. Later, Jeff Iles, professor and chair of the Department of Horticulture at Iowa State University, will be here, along with Richard Geron from Iowa State University Extension. They'll answer your questions about the trees and plants in your life. Join our conversation after the news. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. Good morning. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day today, and in a few minutes, Jeff Iles, professor and chair of the Department of Horticulture at Iowa State University, will be here, along with Richard Geron from Iowa State University Extension. But we're going to start off the hour with a conversation about the weather. Craig Kogel is a meteorologist with the National Weather Service in Des Moines. Hi, Craig.
How are you doing?
I'm great. It has been awfully dry in the last few weeks. How do we compare to normal at this time of year?
Certainly, at least for the month of May, we've certainly dropped behind normal. We did have some active weather to begin the month that gave us some decent rainfall. But since that point in time, really the last 2.5 weeks, we've been pretty much below normal precipitation-wise across much of the state except for maybe the far northwest. You know, during that time, we've seen warmer than normal temps, persistent winds, general lack of rain, and low humidity. So that's really dried out the soils, especially in the southeastern two-thirds of the state at this point. So things have really dried out for us.
Whenever we go through a dry spell, people do start throwing the word drought around quite a bit. What would make this a drought?
Well, if we continued to see this persistent, dry weather over the next few weeks, you know, we've seen some degradation. We do monitor this and update a drought monitor weekly that follows the trends of precipitation and temperature across the whole United States. And in Iowa here, just this past week, we went from generally normal conditions to abnormally dry conditions across much of central and southern Iowa. Northwest Iowa had already been in moderate drought. And so with this dry weather, you know, it's continued to see deterioration in conditions across the state here.
How do you make that call? What makes it a drought?
Well, there can be numerous factors that go into deciding that. The obvious one is general lack of rain. And then certainly, you know, some, you know, how warm it's been over the past, several weeks as well. You know, during the winter season, you don't really have much of an issue with that because at that point in time, you know, the ground's frozen and you don't really have any transport of water in or out of the ground. But you get to the growing season and as your plants come up, you know, they're drawing on water. And then these dry conditions with the lack of rain plus the low humidities really go into determining how we decide that. And there's actually a group of people that sit down and discuss this as to, you know, where we're at with this. If it's abnormally dry, or are we getting to severe conditions? Are we seeing cities that are having problem getting water supplied to the citizens? And, you know, you look at a variety of different things to come up and determine how bad the drought is in a particular area.
Now, many areas of the state did get a little bit of rain yesterday and overnight. How much rain do we need to get us back to normal?
If you're, it depends kind of where you're at in the state. Right now, if you're central and southern Iowa, we'd probably need a good 5 or 6 inches of rainfall to get us back to where we need to be. You get up into the northwest, they've actually had some decent rains up in the northwest quarter of the state here over the past several weeks, so they wouldn't need nearly as much to get back there, maybe only a couple more inches. But certainly we'd need some widespread rainfalls, central and southern Iowa. Like I say, 4 to 6 inches would really help.
And we've got a little bit of rain in the forecast, but that makes it sound like it's going to need to be a lot of rain, not just a little bit of rain.
Yeah, well, and the thing is you want to space that rain out over a period of a few weeks, not all at one time. But we do have a threat of rainfall, especially as we head into later on this afternoon and tonight. We see a warm front moving up over the state, and so we should see an expansion of showers and thunderstorms across much of central and northern Iowa during that time frame. And, you know, some places certainly could see upwards of an inch by tomorrow morning.
And what part of the state do you consider most at risk right now?
For seeing rainfall, it really looks like the northern two-thirds of the state look the best threat. And the farther north you get, I think the better threat you have of seeing substantial rainfall. So, certainly those locations are at best risk of seeing some decent rain.
All right, Craig, thank you so much for your time today.
No problem.
Craig Kogel is a meteorologist with the National Weather Service in Des Moines. And now Jeff Iles is here with us. He's a professor and chair of the Department of Horticulture at Iowa State University. Hi, Jeff.
Hey, Charity. How you doing?
Great. Welcome back to the show.
Thanks for letting me back.
Well, you're welcome back anytime. It's been a long time, though. But with these dry conditions, we've talked a little bit about watering on the show in the last few weeks, but suddenly that has become a critical part of what we need to be doing right now.
Right. Well, I enjoyed the comments from your previous guest, and it's interesting that we need to keep in mind that a lot of the root systems of our woody plants are rather shallow, and so when we talk about dry weather conditions, it's the upper levels of the soil that dry fastest, and that's where a lot of the roots are, and so perhaps our woody plants suffer earlier than what we might expect.
What define woody plants for me?
Okay, well, and we could talk about herbaceous plants and annuals as well, but I'm talking about your garden variety trees and shrubs, the real the backbone of any landscape. These are the perennial plants that have woody structures to them, and of course, they're a little more resilient than your bedding plants and your herbaceous perennials, just by virtue of the fact that they have a more extensive root system. But whatever you're talking about, any landscape plant, the root systems are relatively shallow, and that runs counter to how we think of trees and shrubs.
Sure, we talk about the taproot.
Right. We used to think that the root system mirrored the above ground part of the plant. That is, if you have a tree that's 40 feet tall and 30 feet across, we used to think the root system mirrored that below ground, and it really isn't that way. The roots are relatively shallow, and they're wide spreading. And so when you have dry conditions, it is those upper layers of the soil that suffer the first, and the root systems within those layers suffer first.
So there are many trees and shrubs in the landscape that have been there long enough that there's really nothing we can do at this point to help them out, isn't there?
You know, Well, you might not be old enough, Charity, but do you remember 1987, 1988?
I do.
That was the first major drought that I encountered when I moved to the state of Iowa, and that was serious. And back then, I remember we were recommending folks to water even those plants that were firmly established in the landscape, that is, the ones that had been around for a while. But you ask the great question, how do you even begin to water a plant that is 40 or 50 years old and that has a root system that spreads all over the yard? And at that time, we were just simply recommending you turn the sprinklers on and you water your lawn and try to provide an inch of water per week.
So try to simulate a rain.
Right. But that becomes expensive. And then,
and if towns are having a hard time providing enough water, that also creates a problem.
Right. And so then we just rely on the plants to be resilient. And that's why we keep talking about the use of well-adapted plants for the landscape. We don't want to be using plants that have that need extraordinary means to keep them alive. And so, for example, the bur oak, just a real workhorse in the Iowa landscape, is a plant that'll tolerate a summer of drought, and yeah, it may suffer a little bit, but it's gonna come out on the other end in pretty good shape. You compare that with a plant like a Japanese maple that requires a specific location in the landscape and is kind of borderline hardy for many parts of the state. That plant may suffer more. So it's hard to talk in generalities, but that's why we continue to stress using the right plant for the right site and using organic mulches around the base of these plants to help conserve on soil moisture during these dry periods.
We talked a couple weeks ago about making sure to mulch trees that you've just planted, but to conserve moisture, is it a good idea to make sure you've got mulch down around all your trees?
Well, I think it's a good idea. And again, think about a large burrow in your landscape. The root system is extensive, so you can't mulch the entire front yard. Although that might seem like a good idea when you're
would cut down on mowing.
That's right. I'm not sure my wife would appreciate that, but. So mulching is a great thing, and we're talking 2 to 3 inches spread out to maybe the perimeter of the tree, or out to the drip line, so to speak. But again, that might encompass a lot of the front yard. So let your conscience be your guide. You know, it has to look good as well. If you have dogs, pets, kids, you want turf grass. Turf grass provides a valuable function for a lot of our landscapes. But I like to use mulch to keep the mowers away from the base of the trunk of the tree or shrub. But you don't want to be injuring your trees and shrubs when you're doing the lawn maintenance.
Now, in the southeastern part of the state, we haven't had any rain for 21 days
right now.
And when you go out in the yard and you look around, you can see if there's an area where there isn't a lot of grass. You can see the cracks in the dirt. And probably many other parts of the state have seen very similar conditions, although fortunately, a lot of parts of the state at least got about a half an inch yesterday, so that was awfully nice. But in the southeastern part of the state, we just saw a couple sprinkles, really.
Right.
So we can see that it's dry. When we look at the trees and shrubs in our landscape, how do we start to see when they're distressed?
Yeah. Well, obviously, a wilting leaf would be the first sign. Perhaps yellowing leaves, particularly leaves on the inside of the canopy. Remember, a tree or shrub is a pretty crafty organism, and so its first job is to survive. And one way to survive is to reduce the number of leaves that are transpiring or giving off water. And so a response mechanism might be a wilting symptom or simply defoliation to get rid of leaves that it can't support.
And I did notice a maple tree at a neighbor's house yesterday with yellowing leaves.
Yeah.
So things...
And a river birch is a good indicator plant. That's a plant that typically jettisons its interior canopy leaves in June and July as weather conditions become stressful. This year, the calendar has moved up 4 to 6 weeks, it seems. So a yellowing leaf and then the loss of those leaves would be a drought indicator.
Okay, we touched on this last week or a couple weeks ago. When you know it's time to water a tree, what's the best way to do it?
Yeah. Well, and I'm most concerned about the plants that were just put in the ground this spring or last year. And the recommendations have changed somewhat over the past 5 to 10 years based on some pretty good research that tells us we should be watering more frequently than what we used to. The old recommendation was you'd provide an inch of water a week and you'd be happy. Well, now we realize, especially with a lot of our container-grown plants that have a confined root system, those plants dry out quicker. And they've got a confined root system, so you've got to maybe apply water 1 to 3 times a week, and you've got to make sure the water gets on top of the root system. You know, we're recommending watering from the surface and letting it percolate down, but get the water to where the roots are, do it frequently, and again, use the mulch, and that helps even out the highs and lows.
All right. We'll continue our conversation in a moment. With me right now, Jeff Iles. He is a professor and chair of the Department of Horticulture at Iowa State University. Richard Giron will join us in just a moment from Iowa State University Extension. And you can call with your questions, 866-780-9100. The lines are open. This is Talk of Iowa. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day today, and with me are Jeff Iles. He's a professor and chair of the Department of Horticulture at Iowa State University. Richard Giron is also here now from Iowa State University Extension. Hello, Richard.
Good morning.
Thank you for being here, and you're welcome to join our conversation as well. The number to call is 866-780-9100. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org, or you can tweet us at IPR Talk. And before we get to our first question, Jeff, you said water frequently. How frequently is frequent?
Well, if I just planted something last weekend, then I'm going to keep an eye on that plant. Of course, all these recommendations are based on current weather conditions. But if it stays dry, I might want to water really well initially when I first plant the thing, and then maybe 2 to 3 times, maybe 3 times per week. And I'm trying to deliver maybe, half an inch of water every time I water. But remember, you've got a confined root system on any new plant, and that plant is going to transpire water away from that new root system. And so frequency becomes key. Now, as the plant gets established, you can back off on the frequency. maybe to once a week. And then, of course, as we head into fall and winter, then you put the hoses away. But it's not easy. It's maybe one of the hardest questions that Richard and I have to answer is how often and when to water a newly installed tree or shrub. But I think we've made a mistake in the past by maybe going with this once a week mindset, and consequently we've been subjecting our plants to drought stress.
All right. We've got a lot of callers on the line, and you're welcome to join us at 866-780-9100. Pat is up first from Lamoni. Hi, Pat.
Hi.
What's your question?
I have a backyard maple tree that's approximately 12 to 15 feet tall, and it's been in my yard for three springs now, and it leaves out nicely, and then about a month later it develops these kind of red rust-colored bumps on the leaves that look like something has been deposited on the leaves, and I'm curious what those are and if it's a concern for the tree.
Pat, are these raised or are they flat with the leaf? These
they're raised, and they're small, about the size of, if you dotted an ink pen on the leaf, about that size, but
yeah,
they are raised,
yeah,
and they're affixed to the leaf pretty firmly.
Yeah. Some kind of a silver maple, maybe, or one of those hybrid.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, there's a small mite that causes these little galls to form, and they're harmless, really. And I know they look terrible, and sometimes they get so thick on a leaf they cause the leaf to curl. But in the grand course of things, they really do very little harm to the tree. You could prevent them from happening, but I doubt if it's worth all the effort. But they're caused by a very, very small mite that feeds on the foliage, and of course the plant's response to the feeding is to grow around the insult, and so that's what you're seeing there. They're quite common on silver maples, but I've never seen a plant really suffer because of them.
Well, you're right in that they tend to curl the leaves, but as I said, it comes back nicely each spring.
Sure.
So.
Yeah. No, okay. It's more of a conversation piece, but it doesn't really cause any long-term damage to the plant.
All right, Pat, thanks a lot for your call. And we've got Tara up next from Mason City. Hi, Tara.
Hi there.
What's your question?
I have a contorted filbert. It's about 3 feet tall. I haven't planted it yet. It just came home from the nursery about 10 days ago. It's got wilted leaves. I've been watering it, and I've tried putting it in the sun, and I moved it over to the shade. I'm wondering if you, and there was no kind of a care tag attached to it. I'm wondering if you could offer some advice on that.
So Tara, this is in a plant. The plant's in a container?
It is as of right now, yes.
Okay. I don't think there's anything wrong with putting it in a shaded area until you plant it. That might help reduce its water loss, because as we just spoke a few minutes ago, this plant, because it's been so hot and windy, is losing a lot of water, and consider that it has a rather confined root system, and so it's probably drying out rather quickly. So I'd water that thing at least once a day. You can't really overwater something above ground in a container, and
okay,
so maybe when it's 90 degrees and windy, you might water it twice a day. But
sure,
the plant also has kind of a wilting look to it. I don't know. It's been a while since I've seen one of these things, but they give the appearance of having kind of a wilted look. But
okay, that's what I was wondering. That was my next question,
yeah,
is that just maybe slightly,
well,
the way it looks?
You know, and I'm sure you've been watering it, and if the soil's moist, then maybe you're just mistaking what it normally does for something that's wrong. But when you go to plant that plant, I don't know if you've taken it out of its container yet, but it probably has a pretty dense, confined root system. And you really want to do your very best job in loosening that root system up before you plant it. Because if you just threw it in the ground as is, that root system sometimes has a hard time branching out and growing out into the backfill soil. So really get rough with the root system as you plant that.
Okay.
All right.
And sun or shade?
Sun,
does it prefer?
Full sun. Full sun is fine.
Great.
And it's an interesting plant. It's especially effective in the winter landscape because of its contorted branching.
Yeah, I did. I fell in love with it last fall at the nursery, and then finally got one this spring for Mother's Day. So
yeah, good.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Thanks a lot for your call, Tara. And next up, we've got Franklin on the line in Fairfield. Hi, Franklin.
Oh, hello. Hi. Yes, thank you. I have this peony tree. I have many of them, but this one I planted last year. It bloomed after I planted it, and it's doing very well. Everything in the garden is just perfect, and the succulent and beautiful and cold to the touch. So I keep my garden mulched with green, just a plant, you know, like a chickweed and things. However, this peony tree, second year, she bloomed already, but it's been kind of experiencing an earlier fall. All the leaves are turning yellowish, pink, reddish, brown, and there is one or two that are, the tips are totally desiccated. When I discovered that, I was very alarmed, and I started watering every day. I am concerned that there might be something else instead of this horrible drought. Can you tell me something about it?
Well, I probably wouldn't be watering every day. I would water well and then come back in 2 or 3 days. If the ground is getting dry, then water again. But if you water well, I would think doing it once every 5-6 days should be fine. What you might want to do is maybe take some photographs, if you have a digital photo camera, and take some digital photographs and send those possibly to the Plant Diagnostic Clinic here at Iowa State. And the email address is P as in plant, I as in insect, D as in disease, C as in clinic, at iastate.edu. And take some close-ups of the photograph of the actual foliage. Take some plants, pictures of the entire plant, and send those to the clinic, and they'll examine those and see if they can see some reason for that. But at this point, I would guess if you water well, the plant should be fine for probably 5-6 days.
All right. Thanks a lot for your call, Franklin. And next up, we've got Susie on the line in Ames. Hi, Susie.
Hello. Thank you for this opportunity. I have a mature peony bush I transplanted maybe 3-4 years ago. And this year I thought, oh, this is looking very good. It had lots of buds on it, but only one bud flowered. Hmm. The rest of the buds are still closed, and they seem to have, you know, a very dry, dark edge to the what should be petals when they open.
Okay. One thought would be maybe the freezing temperatures in April.
Okay.
We had very cold temperatures April 10th, 11th, 12th. Possibly that damaged the flower buds, and therefore they did not fully develop.
Okay.
Another possibility would be botrytis, which is a fungal disease, which sometimes attacks the actual bud and will kind of destroy it so it doesn't open. So that would be a possibility, too. Does the plant get full sun?
It gets full sun probably 10 in the morning till 2, 3 in the afternoon.
That should be enough. That should be enough. Sometimes if they're growing in quite shady areas, they just don't have enough strength or energy for them to develop those buds fully, and they just don't make it. So, but if they get sun from like 10 till maybe 2 or 3, that should be enough.
What would the fungal look like if I...
Well, the buds simply kind of turn brown. They just don't fully develop, and they turn brown. Oftentimes you do see spots on the foliage also, in addition to the buds not fully developing. So do you see any spots on the foliage?
Well, I'm not aware. I will certainly go out and look at it again, but it didn't jump out at me.
So let's say you do. Let's say you go out and you see spots on the foliage too. That would tend to kind of confirm it might be botrytis. Then the best way to deal with that is to, this fall, cut them back to the ground and then take that debris from the garden and destroy it. Don't leave that dead debris in the area. That helps as far as next year.
Okay, I do cut it to the ground every year.
Okay. Make sure you get rid of that plant debris. And as far as the cold, obviously you can't do anything about that.
Right.
We just had a very unusual spring this year.
Would it have helped had I covered it that night?
It might have. I know most peonies did survive and bloom just fine. But varieties may vary somewhat in their hardiness, and it is possible the temperatures did damage the buds.
Thank you so very much.
All right. Thanks a lot for your call, Susie. You can join our conversation at 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send an email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Joanne is on the line next from Des Moines. Hi, Joanne.
Hi. I have a serviceberry tree that's about, 8-10 years old. So it was well established. And late last summer and fall, we had a really dry spell then. And I watered that tree. I've never watered it, you know, since I had it put in, but I just did it last year because it was so dry. And I put the hose at the drip line, and I would let it run very slowly for, 3 or 4 hours. And then I put it on the other side of the tree and do that. And I did that a couple of times last fall. And this year, I have so many berries on that tree that it is just drooping because the branches are so heavy. Now, did that watering have something to do with all these berries being produced?
Probably not.
Probably not. Okay.
But if I were to hand out awards this morning, I would certainly congratulate you on your diligence in watering last fall. You're right. This dry spell seemed to have gotten its start last fall. So what you did was perfect. You got the water into the ground at a slow rate. You paid attention to the root spread. Well done, Joanne. That was good. But to equate your good watering practices with the heavy fruit set this year, I'm not sure that's a direct cause and effect relationship. You certainly have a healthy plant, and the plant probably flowered like crazy this spring because that's why you have so many fruit. And sometimes plants get into this habit of flowering heavily in alternate years, so it'll be fun to watch that thing next year. And if it doesn't...
Yes, because last year I didn't have very many berries. Yeah. I didn't get any. The birds got them all.
So
I'm getting a lot of them myself. So
there you go. And it's kind of maddening when plants get into that alternate bearing habit, but it's fairly common in the plant world. So, but congratulations anyway, Joanne. You did a great job.
All right, Joanne. Thanks a lot for your call. And on the topic of watering, we have this tweet. Instead of surface watering, is there an in-ground system or way to water trees to increase efficiency and limit water waste?
Yeah. I'm glad that question was raised because we often hear recommendations about deep root feeding or deep root watering. But it kind of runs counter to what we just talked about, especially in poor soils that are compacted or poorly drained. A lot of the roots are shallow, and so it doesn't make a whole lot of sense to plunge some magic root watering needle deep into the ground. So I think the best way, and this isn't glamorous, it's certainly not rocket science, is the use of mulch over the root system and then applying water on the surface that slowly infiltrates is the best way to get water to that rather shallow root system. And of course, if you're applying water to the surface, you're applying it more uniformly than you would if you were plunging a needle into the ground. So I wish there was a magic answer. In fact, I'm looking at a picture right here of something called a gator bag. Maybe you've seen these things. They're like plastic bags you put around trees, and they let water out slowly. You know, They're nice, and hopefully one of your sponsors to the show isn't the gator bag people, but you can do the same thing with a garden hose and a patient hand. So,
all right.
Sorry, Charity.
I'm okay with that.
Okay.
All right. Rout sent this email from Cedar Rapids. He says, what is the best way to get rid of mint plants and still grow some other plants in the same location? My mint plants on the ground are growing like crazy, and now it's spreading into the lawns, and he ends with a help me.
Mint is very, very aggressive. It's going to take patience and persistence to control it. And I think I would just dig it up repeatedly. And this may take maybe a year, maybe 2 years to control it. If you want to plant it, my suggestion is to put it in a pot and then sink the pot in the ground and leave the upper inch of the pot above ground level so it can't sneak out of the pot. And grow it that way.
Okay. Good luck with that, Rout. This is from Jackie. I have a Miss Kim lilac, 10 years old. It was in the sun, but now it's in the shade. It didn't bloom very much this year. It has bloomed in previous years. Can it be moved, or do I just need to get a new plant and plant in a different sunny location?
10 years. That's a pretty big plant.
It would be a lot of digging.
Anybody. Yeah, I mean, every plant can be moved. I guess it depends on your patience and your strength. That would be a pretty large thing to move around the landscape. Might be better just to buy a new one. They do, as the writer knows, these things do better in full sun. But also, remember what Richard said a few minutes ago. We had this weird April weather, and that might have also played a hand in the reduction of of flowering. But yeah.
And should she think about pruning the lilac bush if it's been 10 years? Could that be a factor?
Well, the only thing I like to do with Miss Kim Lilac, if you have the time, is to remove the spent flowers, which helps the plant conserve on energy. But no, I think benign neglect is one of the best things to do for lilacs. Don't fertilize it, because that sometimes throws it into more of a vegetative state. Sunlight is important. Who knows why this thing didn't perform this year, but it could be weather related. I've seen them flower in the shade, so I'm wondering if there's something more to this story. If there's a limb that can be removed to allow a little better light penetration, that might be something to do.
Okay, but mainly she just needs to wait and see what happens next year.
Yeah, but don't pour the fertilizer to it. That's the knee-jerk reaction many times, and that kind of runs at cross purposes.
All right, Jeff Iles is here. He is the chair of the Department of Horticulture at Iowa State University. Richard Giron is also here from Iowa State University Extension Horticulture. And you can join our conversation at 866-780-9100. Tweet us at IPR Talk or send an email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. This is Talk of Iowa. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. It's Horticulture Day today. I'm Charity Nebbe. I'm here with Richard Giron from Iowa State University Extension Horticulture and Jeff Iles, chair of the Department of Horticulture at Iowa State University. And you are welcome to join our conversation. Our email address is talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And Randy is on the line from Iowa County. Hi, Randy.
Hi there. You know what I call the Iowa peach. They're kind of a buff color with a little bit of a red cheek on them. The two trees I've got, they didn't have many because of that frost that we had earlier, but mm-hmm. It seems in the last couple of days some of the peaches are maybe not quite the size of a quarter, but they're falling on the ground, and I've noticed some of them have what looks like something stung them.
Okay.
Is there any kind of a trap that I can put some bait in that'll catch those little buggers?
Probably not a trap. As far as why they're falling off, they may have been damaged by the freezing temperatures, maybe not destroyed, but damaged. And so they did begin to develop initially, but they could not fully develop and they're falling off. What you might be seeing on there might be a plant bug damage as far as damage to the fruit. That typically occurs early on. And to prevent that, you typically have to spray just prior to bloom and then right after bloom, and that would prevent that.
I know a guy that's got a peach tree last year. One side of the peach was kind of ruddy or kind of a gray on the side of it. Is that some kind of disease or maybe too much fruit?
Boy, without seeing the actual fruit, I'm not sure offhand. Sometimes it could be weather damage. As far as humidity and things like that, kind of superficial that we can just peel it. But without seeing the actual fruit, I'm not sure.
All right, Randy, thanks a lot for your call, and I hope your pear trees are doing well. Next up, we've got Polly on the line from Des Moines. Hi, Polly.
Hi. I have a question regarding a September Wonder Fuji apple tree that's in our backyard. We planted it last year. This year, other than it getting no flowers in the spring, we were not too concerned with it, except on Monday, it suddenly in the evening, I noticed it looked like it was starting to wilt. So I watered it on Tuesday and then on Wednesday. And then yesterday in the early evening, I looked again, and it's not getting any better. And the leaves actually now have some brown spots on them. And given how suddenly it came on Monday, I'm just not quite sure what happened, so I wanted to seek your advice.
Well, for some reason, the tree is not getting water. Maybe there's some major root problem, maybe some trunk problem. Is there any visible damage to the trunk that you can see?
No. We actually have kind of a cover on it to protect it from rabbits and other backyard wildlife, and I have looked up and down the 6 foot tall of this trunk, and I cannot find anything.
Okay. So apparently there's some root damage.
Mm-hmm.
If you water and the tree is not responding, there's not much else you can do.
Okay.
Unfortunately, the tree may not survive. That's a possibility. I would water and water well, and then probably come back in 3 or 4 days and maybe water again if I need to, but that's probably all you can do. And if it's a moisture problem, a healthy root system should take care of that. So maybe there is some type of root problem, and all you can do is wait and see.
Okay.
All right, good luck with that, Polly. Thanks a lot for your call.
Thanks so much. Yep. Bye.
Bye. Eric is on the line next from Anamosa. Hi, Eric.
Hello.
What's your question?
My tomato plants. Last year I had the same problem, and it looks like it's happening again this year. The upper leaves on the plant are just starting to curl up. And last year we still had a decent crop of tomatoes, but just wondering what's causing the curling of the leaves.
Well, when you say curling, sometimes if there's herbicide drift, that will cause curling of the foliage. But usually in addition to curling, there's twisting and distortion.
Definitely there is that.
So a broadleaf herbicide like 2,4-D, dicamba, any of the growth regulator type herbicides, if there's drift, and they can drift, and we all know it's been windy in the last few weeks, so if there is any drift, that will cause twisting, curling, distortion. Tomatoes are very sensitive to broadleaf herbicides, but usually if that's the case, they'll usually come out of it over time. So if it's simply a herbicide drift problem and the damage is fairly minor, they should recover in the next few weeks.
Okay, thank you.
Thanks a lot for your call, Eric. And next up, we're going to go to Jeff in Ankeny. Hi, Jeff.
Hello.
Hi, what's your question?
So I have a black black locust tree that's like 30 inches in diameter and 80 feet tall. I don't know anything about locusts, really, other than they have a lot of BTUs, and I was wondering how rare are these huge youngest trees, and what would be maybe the most efficient way to get it down and into my furnace.
So you're asking if you should cut this tree down.
Yeah, I've been told that they're pretty tough. I don't know. So, yeah.
Okay.
So Jeff, you're positive it's a black locust? You've had it identified?
I haven't had it identified, but I'm fairly certain it is.
Okay. Well, it is a tough character, and the wood will challenge you as you cut it down. I don't know enough about its BTU potential to advise you, but I've heard it might burn pretty hot. So is it in your, I mean, is it a valuable tree, or are you just looking at this tree for what it might do in your fireplace?
Yeah, no, it's not a valuable tree. It's there are several of them and stuff, but yeah, I'm thinking maybe getting some energy out of it. And,
okay. Hey, I'll tell you what. The person you might want to talk to is Dr. Jesse Randall over in the Department of Natural Resource Ecology and Management. I don't have his phone number, but Jesse Randall works a lot in the area of wood products and what you do with trees once you cut them down and things like that. He might be able to provide you some good advice about how best to utilize this plant.
Well, and you can email him at Randall, RANDALLJ, at iastate.edu. So you can get in touch with him that way. Jeff, thanks a lot for your call, and let's move on now to Earl in West Des Moines. Hi, Earl.
Good morning, folks. I planted some swamp white oak acorns. One I planted where I wanted it to sprout. The other one I planted in a nursery, so I gingerly dug it up, put it in a pot, to move it to another site later on to preserve that trap root. My question is, if I want to leave it in that spot to grow in the pot, does that pot need to be completely submerged in the ground? Right now it's sticking about, top of the pot is about 4 or 5 inches above the soil line.
So, Earl, how long will it remain in that container?
Maybe 2 or 3 years. I'm not sure yet.
Oh, not real fond of that idea.
Okay.
I guess I would try to find its permanent location sooner than that. In fact, in this calendar year would be best.
Okay.
If it remains in that container, you're going to end up with a pretty funny-looking root system. So I would try to get it transplanted as soon as you can.
So don't let it winter over in that spot.
I wouldn't. Now, if you want to move it up to a larger size container and keep it in its pot in a pot, then that would be something you could do. But what's the size of the pot? What's the size of the container?
It's about a 4 or 5 inch pot.
Yeah, that's pretty dinky. So if you want to keep it in a pot,
I mean the diameter.
Sure.
You know, maybe a 3 or 4 gallon, I'd say, as far as the quantity of the pot.
Okay. Even so. If you're gonna, this is what nursery producers do in a commercial sense. They never leave the plant in a container for very long. They want to keep moving it up or sizing it up. So if that's your intent, if you don't want to plant it someplace permanently right away, then I would find it a larger container.
Okay. But ideally plant it this year before winter hits.
That would be my preference because, you know, trees in containers are sometimes not the best bedfellows. You know, all kinds of weird things happen to root systems when they're left in pots too long. I don't think you have to worry about a taproot in a container. That this plant is going to develop a different looking root system than it would in nature. And so my recommendation, just like it was a couple of callers ago, is when you do take that plant out of its pot, you want to make sure to really rough up the root system. Because chances are it will have begun to spiral in that container, and you really want to break up the roots and have them grow outward as it establishes itself in its new location.
All right, good luck with that, Earl. Next up, we're going to go to Musa in Des Moines. Hi, Musa. All right, maybe not. Let's move on then to Stanley. Hi, Stanley.
Well, hi. The question I had, we direct seeded 10 acres of oak, ash, walnut, and hickory 4 years ago, and the trees are anywhere from 5 to 8 foot tall. I was just wondering, when's the best time to start trimming them so they grow in the right directions, and what time of year to do that, and when to thin them out?
Great question, Stanley. I guess what I would do with a young tree is pay attention to leader development. So I would like to favor a central leader on all of those. But there is some value to leaving lower branches on these plants, the lower branches that run up and down the stem, which contribute to root system growth and to stem taper development. You know, you might start limbing them up slightly, but don't limb them up dramatically. Now, you're saying 5 to 8 feet tall. I'd like to have 2/3 of the tree in branches. So if you stand back and look at the plant, if it's an 8 foot tall tree, I'd like to see at least 5 or 6 feet of that tree have branches on it. And that'll help develop my stem taper. But look for branch spacing. Look for leader development, and realize, too, with trees of this size or potential size, what you're looking at right now are really temporary branches. Everything you see there is temporary. Eventually, you're probably going to be doing quite a bit of limbing up as these plants mature, but developing that central leader and having a good straight stem is something that will pay dividends down the road.
Okay, and how about should they be thinned out because some areas they're really thick, or just let them continue to light for the sky?
Well, Stanley, what's the purpose of these trees? Are you going to leave them in place? Are you going to transplant them to another location?
No, we're going to leave them in place. There's 10 acres of them.
Well, yeah, I think I would begin to thin. You would want them to develop, and of course, if they're competing with each other, that's not going to happen. So I don't know how best to advise you, but I would begin to thin them and give them room to grow.
Okay. All right. I appreciate that.
Thanks a lot for your call, Stanley. And let's get through a couple of emails here. This one from Terry. I have a raised garden, lasagna garden, and I want to put a border around it. I have pressure-treated 2x8s and wondered if the chemical used in the pressure treatment would be harmful to the garden.
Probably not. But a good way to maybe avoid that to make sure would be to maybe put a plastic liner on the inside of the raised bed between the soil and the material. That would be kind of a guarantee.
Okay, so just a little bit of an insurance policy there.
Right.
All right, this is from John. He says, I have a dwarf cherry tree that was planted last year. After showing a good 6 inches of growth, the leaves abruptly turned brown and died. The tree did not leaf out this spring. I also have blueberries planted nearby that have shown a similar die-off where the leaves turn brown and one or more stems die. Could there be something in the soil that's causing this leaf die-off, and should I be concerned about planting another tree in the same location?
I would guess it has something to do with the site or the care, or something of that nature. So as far as replanting, when you replant or plant fruit trees, there's two major requirements. Make sure it has a well-drained soil. Fruit trees do not like wet, poorly drained sites. It's almost a death sentence. So make sure it's a well-drained soil and it has at least 6 hours of direct sun, and replant in those areas. And when you plant, make sure they're well-watered that first year and keep on watering until fall if necessary.
All right. And this is from Heather in Des Moines, and she titled her email Wisteria Hysteria. So she gets extra points for that. She says, I have what I believe is a wisteria in the bed at the front of my home. Last summer, an offshoot sprung up on the opposite side of my front steps. I've heard horror stories about the wisteria root systems destroying everything in their path. My home is almost 100 years old. Should I be concerned about what this plant may be doing to the foundation? And if so, how do I get rid of it?
I wouldn't worry about the foundation, but as far as it coming up, probably the only thing you can do is to simply cut it off on occasion when it comes up. So if it has this nature as far as suckering from the root system, just cut them off periodically. If you want to keep that main plant, you can't use a herbicide like Roundup, because if you do, that may damage or destroy the main plant.
Okay, good luck with that, Heather. And one more call I think we'll be able to squeak in here. John from Donaldson. Hi, John.
Good morning. Thank you for taking my call. I have new raised beds, and we seem to have a high population of rabbits in Donaldson. And I'm wondering if there are some non-gun related, since we're in the city,
okay,
ways of controlling the rabbit population without importing their natural predator, the coyotes, who I don't have a lot of friends with those either.
Well, if you have like brush piles and places where they can hide, you can remove those and that might help. The best way to prevent damage is fencing, either chicken wire fencing, hardware cloth, where you physically keep them out of a given area. But as far as reducing the population, brush removal, making the environment less favorable for them might help a little bit.
All right, John, thanks a lot for your call. And we are out of time for this week. Richard, thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Richard Giron from Iowa State University Extension Horticulture. Jeff Iles, thank you.
Charity, my pleasure.
And then don't be a stranger. Come back again
All right.
soon.
Have a great Memorial Day.
Yeah, you too. Jeff Iles, professor and chair of the Department of Horticulture at Iowa State University. Have a wonderful Memorial Day weekend. Talk of Iowa is produced by Dennis Reese and Emily Woodbury. Our executive producer is Jeff Schmidt. Production assistance today from Allison Sullivan. Technical support from Jason Burns in Ames. You can send us email anytime, talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Our theme music was composed and performed by the River Monks. I'm Charity Nebbe. When we're back on Tuesday, I'll talk with best-selling author Steve Barry. Talk of Iowa is a production of Iowa Public Radio News.